Appreciate that song. I'd have a hard time saying it's my favorite because I have a lot that I really like. But ever since I've heard that song the first time, I've just thought it was a great song. The words are great. To me, the melody is great. And so I appreciate you leading that song for us this evening. I'm proud of our kids. Even when I get them a little confused and they need a hint or something, I'm still awfully proud of all they've learned so far. And we're just scratching the surface of what they can learn as long as they keep at it. And I love them and I'm proud of them. In our previous lesson was from Hebrews 11. It was about faith. And we covered faith pretty well in that lesson. We talked about the definition of faith from the first verse, the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. While that sounds a little bit wordy, it's basically we believe even though we haven't seen. We haven't seen heaven. We haven't seen God. We didn't see Jesus arise from the grave or see him on the cross or see him heal the blind man or any of those things we read about in the scriptures about him. But yet we believe those things, and we have reasons for that. Also, in this chapter, we saw some examples of faith. We won't go through all of them, but by faith, Abel offered a more excellent sacrifice than Cain. That's the first one. And then the third one is Noah. By faith, Noah, being warned of things to come, moved with fear, and built an ark to the saving of his house, and became the heir of righteousness which is by faith. And then the very next verse is the very next character, Abraham. By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go to a place he'd never been before, says he obeyed and he went. And later in that text, it talks about by faith he was willing to offer his only promised son, Isaac, even because, not just even though, because he believed so deeply and God would fulfill his promises to him that he said if he has to raise up Isaac from the grave, he'll do it to fulfill his promises that he made to me. Faith. But one of the points I like to make about faith, and we made this last week, or 2 weeks ago actually, is that faith is always demonstrated by obedience. If it's not, then it's just mental assent. But Abel, Noah, and Abraham all did things that showed they believed in God, that showed they believed what he said, and they were demonstrating their faith by their willingness to obey that which he gave them. Tonight's lesson comes from the next to last thing on the green card, a good marriage. I want us to look at the text in 1 Peter 3 that refers to this. Likewise, ye wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they also may be, without the word, be won by the conversation of the wives, while they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear, whose adorning, let it not be the outward adorning of the plaiting of hair and of wearing of gold or putting on apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart, in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. For after this manner, in the old time, the holy women also who trusted in God adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well and are not afraid with any amazement. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. In the Garden of Eden, God created man. He created him first. But after Adam was given the task of naming all of the things, all the other living things that God had created and given them a name. God said it's not good that man should be alone, and he wanted to create for him a helper that was suitable for him. Now, we can like our dogs and our cats and whatever, and they are decent companions, but they're not the suitable companion for a man, or vice versa, for a woman. We need human companionship. And so God then set in order when he created the woman. She was a part of the man, but she wasn't a man. There's a purpose in that. God created a male and female for a purpose. And then at the end of Genesis chapter 2, he says that, "So shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and the two shall be one flesh." That enables them to carry out one of God's instructions early on, which was the reproductive command to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. If God had intended it to be any other way, it wouldn't have been a woman, it would have been another man or whatever. But this is what God gave us. Now, but we also know, because many of us in here either have been or are married, and we understand that it's not always the easiest thing to live with the same person for however many years. There's a lot of things that can interfere with that. So the topic for tonight's called a good marriage. And the instruction that's given in 1 Peter 3 and in some other places, if those are taken to heart by both the man and the woman, then that marriage has a chance to overcome the other obstacles that come to any relationship. So let's look at the text first that we just read. Wives, submit to your own husbands. Now, that goes all the way back to when Eve sinned in the garden. For her punishment listed, among her punishment listed for participating in that sin and then giving it to her husband that he ate, was that he would be the head over her. He would have the rule over her. That relationship was never mentioned anywhere in the Bible that it was change. And so when we get here to 1 Peter 3, he mentions that that's been for a long time there. He doesn't use Adam and Eve as an example, but he uses Abraham and Sarah as an example. In the text it says, "For after this manner in the old time the holy women who trusted in God," and then he uses Abraham and Sarah for that relationship. Wives are to submit to their husbands because God said so. Not because the husband is superior to the wife, but because this is the way God laid it out. Now, he mentions some specific things that can be beneficial in this relationship when the woman is such. That it says if she happens to be married to an unbeliever, it's possible that she might help him to be won or converted by her chaste or pure behavior, a godly behavior. Chaste means pure. Pure behavior with reverence. Now, the reverence is really to God. If she's a godly woman, she's going to be interested in doing that which God has said, not what man says. And he goes farther. It's not the outward appearance that's so important. We place, I think, in our society, way too much importance on how we look. We need to be worried about how we look on the inside more than how we look on the outside. Having the right heart, having the right spirit, being in tune with what God desires, that's what's important in this text. We already talked about that, the example of Sarah. And then he mentions husbands. Husbands are to dwell with their wives, giving honor. I want us to think about another text in Ephesians chapter 5. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church. Do you think that Jesus Christ has a problem, even though he's equal with God, being submitted to the will of God? In Philippians chapter 2, it mentions that though he didn't consider it robbery to be equal with God, he left there. And he came down here. And he didn't come down here and say, I'm the Son of God, you need to listen to me. But rather he came down and he became a servant. And it says that he was willing to do the will of God even when it included dying on the cross. Because he was submitted to him. Paul wrote in one text, for God is the head of Christ, Christ is the head of man, man is the head of woman. But yet at the same time, we're joined together as one. This works well to help us to become heirs together of grace. I think that's an interesting statement. An interesting statement. That we would, as husband and wife, be heirs together of grace. And then he finishes it with this, that your prayers be not hindered. If a man and a woman are married and they're submitted to the will of God together, then they'll have the proper attitude, respect, and love and honor for their spouse, that their prayers not be hindered. Now I want us to think about the word love, because often when we think about marriage, we think about the word love. Although sometimes we get married and the word love is not really the right word for the initial attraction together, because the real deep love that we should have for one another comes from experience, not and knowing somebody, not just because they are attractive to us. So, in Ephesians 5:25, he says, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ loved the church and gave his life for it. Now, the word love there comes from the Greek word agape, is what we say. Agapio is really the root word there. But that is the highest form of love, actually. And when you think about all the other words that, and we're not going to introduce them all, but we are going to introduce one more, that if the husband is to agape his wife, and then in the next text it says that the older women are to teach the younger women to phileo their husband's love, that's a different love. That's talking about the friendship type love. But the husband's not exempted from having that feeling for his wife, because the agape encompasses that. This needs to exist between the people, but it can only truly come when they're devoted to God the way they should be. So when we go to Matthew 22, Jesus was asked, what's the greatest commandment? He says, you need to love God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. Now, I just want you to think about this. If a person loves God the way this text reads, then all the other things that are involved in my life and my relationship to other people, including and especially my spouse, are going to come more naturally, because I want to be what God wants me to be. And God wants me to love my wife as Christ loved the church. God wants me to show her honor because of that love that I have for her. And likewise for the women. If you love God with all your heart and all your soul and all your might, that means that you're striving to be a godly woman to the best of your ability, then you're going to understand what God has said through Peter in this text about submitting yourself to your husband. So a godly man loves God and he loves his wife, because that's what he's supposed to do. He loves God with all that he has, and he loves his wife with all that he has. That's the relationship we're supposed to have. But on the other hand, the godly woman also loves God with all she has, and she loves her husband with all she has. Think about how wonderful that would be if that's the way it is. I used to, and I don't have it on here, but imagine a triangle, you know, has three points. At the top of that triangle is God. And on one side is the husband, and on the other side is the wife. And each of them having that love relationship with God, and then each of them having that love relationship with each other. That's the way God designed it. That's the way God intends it. And anything different than that is something that man came up with. And when your marriage is based on these godly principles, then it has a better chance to be a good marriage than if it doesn't. Because the world is interested in messing with you, messing with us. And we know all the kinds of things that can come between a husband and a wife if they let it. A good marriage has to do with our relationship to God. And when it does, then we can do this. We can, hand in hand, help each other make it to heaven. Because isn't that where we want to end up? I don't know about you, but I want to be in heaven. And I want my wife to be in heaven. And I want my children to be in heaven. Because the alternative to that is so terrible, it's unthinkable. And so as we walk hand in hand with our spouses, we can help each other make it to heaven if we're totally committed to God and thus then to each other. You may be here this evening and you're not a child of God because you've never obeyed the gospel. You don't love God with all your heart and soul and mind. We want you to. We can help you to understand that better if you need to. Or maybe that you've done that in the past, but you've let the world interfere in your life. And if that's the case, we can also help you with that to get you on the right track. If we can assist you in any way this evening to get right with God, won't you come as we stand and sing our song of encouragement?